So today's episode is very special because it's all going to be, the entire thing is a musical medley by Jimmy on trumpet of Christmas songs. So take it away, Jimmy.
I left my trumpet in the workshop.
Oh.
That's where I practice.
That's where you keep it?
Yeah, I practice out in the workshop.
Sounds awesome in there, like tons of echo and stuff.
It does sound really good. I bought a trumpet, so I have a good trumpet that, believe it or not, I found on the street in New York. Willie found it 10 years ago. And it's always been kicking around. It's a really well-made, well-kept student trumpet that someone just left on the street. And then about a month ago, 2 months ago at the flea market, I bought a really, really well-made, well-maintained trumpet, although it's beat up, but all the valves work and everything. So that's been my practice trumpet. I put it for $10. So that that works good, too. So I keep that out sitting on my bandsaw. And in between stuff, I just play with it.
You're going to have like trumpets like you have computers. You're like, this is my desk trumpet, and this is my kitchen trumpet, and this is my workshop trumpet.
Yeah. So I have been playing, and I need to practice a sequence. So I've been practicing scales, but I need to practice a sequence. And when I do get a good sequence that I'm confident about, I will show it off.
I'm looking forward to that. Legitimately, I am.
Looking forward into 25. That's going to be one of my goals, as we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
I was scrolling through Instagram the other day, and I'm like, oh, there's Bob. Oh, Bob is playing the keyboard. Let me turn the sound on. And it wasn't you playing the keyboard. It was the music video. I'm like, dang it, I wanted to hear Bob play.
Yeah, I did do a clip in that video of me when I moved the Rhodes over there. I just played like a little flourish as like a transition, you know, from finishing that sequence. And the editor didn't put it in. And then people in the comments were like, you moved that piano and you didn't even play it. Like, I did, I promise. But yeah. I do want to get back to playing some piano.
Can you talk about that monitor that you sent us a picture of? Is that public knowledge?
Oh yeah, I've had this monitor for a long time. It's a 49-inch ultra-wide gaming monitor.
That's nuts. And you were able to just run a Mac. You run like a Mac Mini, right? So you could just plug it into that.
I've got a Mac Studio. I think any Mac could probably drive it though. It's huge. And at one point, I had two of them. I had one stacked on top of it, and because I found a deal on the second one. Both of the ones I've got are refurbished, so I saved $500 or whatever on them. But it's a fantastic monitor. I wasn't sure that I would like the curved thing, but being that big, the curve kind of disappears after a day or two in your brain, you know, but I love the monitor. It's great. Cause I like to have all the stuff open all the time, you know, to have mail up and calendar up and then whatever I'm working on in the middle. And it gives me enough room to kind of,
I have all that stacked on top of one another. I have like a little tiny edge of every window so I could jump back and forth between everything.
So here's another thing. You won't do this, I know, but I'm going to tell other people that might do it. I recently got a Stream Deck, which is this little, I got it on Black Friday, so it was cheaper. And it's a little desktop button array, and each one of the buttons is a little screen. And so you can customize what the buttons do, and then this one has dials and stuff on it too. And so in any piece of software or just in the system, you can have this button launches this application or turns the volume down or whatever. You can completely customize it, make them look like whatever you want. And one of the things I started doing when I went back to a single monitor is that one of the knobs on the bottom is when you turn it left, it goes to the left desktop. And then if you turn it right, it goes to the right desktop. So I've got multiple desktops set up on my Mac, one with mail, Slack, calendar, utility stuff, one with Fusion, one with, you know, what, I don't know, I don't remember what all's on them. But so basically, they're in my mind, they're stretched out in front of me, left and right completely, and I just turn this dial, and it goes, whoop, over to that one. Turn it right, it goes, whoop, over to that one. And so I don't have as many stacked up, like, overlaid.
I do use the desktop feature a lot. I actually have just checked, I have three desktops open. Yeah, that's actually just really convenient. Because I
lately Stream Deck thing is really cool for setting up little things like that. But
I'm still in my transition using iMovie and Final Cut. So I have one hard drive with Final Cut stuff, one hard drive with iMovie stuff. So I keep them on separate desktops. So far, the computer's been handling them both pretty good. Although I must, I'm going to just put a question out to the audience. This isn't a dire critical problem, but it is a little bit of an issue. iMovie quit on me the other day, and when I restarted it, if I have, it's a 1 year long, this hard drive has a year's worth of projects on it. So if there was, say, 75 projects, only half of them showed up. And every time I start it again, it's like, okay, this is all I'm going to give you, and that's it. So now on the new Mac, the old version of iMovie only it upgraded the files when you put it in the new system. All the root files are there, so I can always find the original files from all the movies that I can't seem to find on the very first user interface. But that's kind of an issue. I don't know. Most of the movies are already done and published, but it's just a matter of some old projects are in there. So I have to navigate them over to Final Cut by just dragging the files out of the root folders. It's annoying because I had a couple projects going, and when I open up the projects window where it shows all the timelines, there should have been maybe 150 in there. Only like 15 show up. So that particular library and my last iMovie library is now like destroyed. I don't know.
So you put multiple projects in one library?
So this is my workflow. It's not crazy, but it's... every time I start a new library in iMovie, I dedicate it to a hard drive.
So, oh, I see what you mean.
Okay. Yeah, so that library has the last 12 months worth of movies on it. It's a 4 terabyte drive. It's only half used, and by the time it's about half used is when I retire them and I start a new one, because I want at least to have some headspace, because when it gets too full up, it takes too long to boot and just gets clunky. So it is... That last library has lots of projects on it. And when I use projects in the name of like iMovie projects, but in general projects, and only half of them are showing up in the user interface when I restart the hard drive. It crashed the other day. Everything was there. And when I restarted it, it crashed in the middle of a render. And when I restarted it, everything was more than half of it's missing. It's not gone for good when you go into the show contents folder. It's all there, but it just doesn't show up.
So this is workflow stuff that everybody does differently. So my way is not the right way. But the way I always did Final Cut stuff, we're in DaVinci Resolve now, so we don't even use Final Cut anymore. But when I was using it, the way I would do that is a library would be a project video. And then the projects within that library were like the main video, the blooper reel, the shorts, the Instagram thing. And we would have different timelines in there that are all versions of that same content. Mm-hmm. That way, if we need to move something from one place to another, we're not moving. I mean, it's a different situation, but we're not moving like a year's worth of.
Right.
It's not the footage, but all of the stuff that goes with the footage.
Yeah, so you're basically making a library for a project. That makes sense, because you're working with editors and you got to move stuff around.
But even if you were doing it by yourself, doing that monthly, maybe not by project, but you know, like January's videos are on this one, it's going to cut down the possibility of something going bad and you losing everything.
About 4 or 5 years ago, I used to do a library for each hard drive.
That's what I was doing.
And then 4 or 5 years ago, Bob says, I do a library for each project. And I was like, maybe I'll try that. And I've been doing that since. And it makes searching older videos much easier, because each library is that particular video. I have this hard drive right here that's like 6 years old, and it's one library with 20 different projects on there, and you can't just search that. You have to act in Mac OS. You have to do like show inside file, and if that library file ever goes bad, the main container, the whole thing doesn't work.
And that's what's happening to me now.
Yeah,
but it's there. I can always, and then Another thing I do, this is another workflow thing I do, is I don't delete any footage off of any cameras until that video is published.
Yes.
So the other day I was having an issue with this video that's going to be out this weekend. It's this circular sign that I made. I showed a couple pictures of it on Instagram with all the CNC letters from the behind. And I sent a rough edit, because it was on iMovie, I sent a rough edit to publish so that I could look at it and make some decisions, and that's when it crashed. That's when I had my problems, and then I realized what was going on. So I just dragged all the files into a Final Cut library and was able to put the edit back together quickly.
Just gave me an idea for a project.
Just last night, I can't remember the last time I lost a file. It's been years and years.
I've never lost a project completely, ever. I've never lost footage ever, like where it's unrecoverable. I've never did.
At 11:30 p.m., I had my camera set up in the shop, and I was recording a sponsored segment. And so I have a little teleprompter thing, and I record the whole thing. I pull out the card. I put it in the computer. I import it. I make sure, this is like right before bed, I make sure everything is there, and I do a quick edit just to make sure I hit all my talking points, and I pull out the card. I didn't realize that Final Cut was still importing the one long file. And usually, and I've done this before, usually all I got to do is put the card back in and just tell Final Cut to re-import that file. It fixes everything. It says it couldn't find the file. I'm like, it's on there. So I look at the card, and that file was missing from the card and missing from Final Cut. So I had to go and re-record the ad segment, and I nailed it that time. So it really only took me an extra.
But you lost it because basically you like plucked the string from each side and it just disappeared.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It disappeared from the computer and the card at the same time.
That's annoying.
Never had that happen before.
Mm. Luckily, we haven't had any big footage problems for quite a while. Like, our process is pretty solid. The problem that we have these days, more than anything, is audio. Like, it doesn't seem to matter what microphone I'm using or what way I've got it attached or under or taped or whatever. It just, like, randomly will sound weird. Randomly will turn itself off. Randomly will, you know.
Yeah. Audio is a big problem if you're not. That's why. This year I did a lot of voiceovers. It didn't seem to help a lot as far as my view count, so I'm going to go back to just doing noisy videos with just tools.
Are you really?
Well, I did it my last video, and it really primarily because I ran out of time. I wanted to publish on Saturday night, and I just finished Saturday afternoon, so I published. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to do a voiceover. I just published a voiceover this morning on Patreon for that same video, so for a dollar, you can go listen to me over-modulate into the microphone. But, I don't know, I'm going to mix it up this year. Nothing seems to improve anything except for the fact that I'm just building my library for the big sell one day, for the big buyout.
The big retirement buyout.
I'll get 50 grand for my whole library, 15 years worth of work.
Never know. Well, what have you been doing this last week?
This week is an easy week for me because, well, I got the Lagosol sawmill video bench out. That was good. That was a fun one. Everyone really likes that video. It's doing well. That was a fun project. It was really fun to improvise and play with the wood. And I left the bark on, and it's going to fall off, and that's okay. It's funny. A lot of people just don't realize they don't care at all. They think that I'm building something for the queen and that it's going to be a huge failure. So like, good luck with that. It's going to twist and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay, cool. Nature is metal.
I'll have a twisty bench.
Yeah, I'll have a twisty bench. I can't believe you made it with it. You cut it and then made it into a bench that day. Yeah, that's what the early American settlers did. That's what Native Americans did. You cut a tree down, you turn it into something. Nobody cured wood. Nobody in the beginning.
I haven't watched that video, but man, the images of that bench are so cool. Beautiful idea.
Thank you. Yeah, it was fun. I just wanted to just present the wood, and I was originally going to use spikes that I did in my earlier table that I made on Instagram. I was going to just bang spikes through the slabs and then figure out some sort of mechanism to keep the back up in place. And then I was like, if I hammer nails through that, it's going to just dry and they'll fall out later. So I needed something more sturdy. So I basically made two steel belts And on those belts carry the back, and the belts carry the leg, so it's real secure. So if the bench checks, cracks, breaks, twists, whatever, that's life. Which I honestly feel it won't do any of those things. If it does, it'll be very subtle. And so I got that video done, and then this week is an easy. A couple of weeks ago, I worked on this sign, which was a nerve-wracking because I only had the right amount of material and also the limited amount of time because it's going to be at the Consumer Electronics Show. That's the first week of January, and that's in a couple of weeks. So the sign had to be delivered by the 25th of November. So I had this one little window, and I only got that information late. So it was basically like, make the sign for January. Oh, by the way, it has to be done at the end of this month, which is like 2 weeks from now. I'm like, oh, okay. So when I jumped into the CNC project, I only had a limited amount of materials and a finite amount of time. And I was really nervous that I was going to mess it up because the CNC is through the quarter-inch material up to 30 thousandths to the face. So I'm CNCing into quarter-inch material from the back up to the front with a 30 thousandths of a piece of material in the front, which is like three business cards together.
Goodness.
And that's because the light has to shine from the back and all the letters and all this. The company, I don't want to say manifesto, that is a negative term, but the company information is all written in the background as a texture on top of the graphic, which is a leaf and a plug and a circle. So then it gets lit up with LEDs. So that's why I was nervous making that sign, because if I went through the front, I would have had to start over. Not to mention the CNC process took 24 hours. Because it was these little letters that had to be CNC'd one at a time. Ultimately, everything worked out. I was able to get it created and shipped to Wisconsin, which was the rendezvous spot for all the consumer electronics stuff. And it arrived safely. So now it has to make it from Wisconsin to Vegas and be installed properly. But that's it. So that video is this week. It's got a voiceover as a sponsor in it and all this other stuff. So I have to get it approved early this week. So by tonight, Wednesday night, it should be ready to be looked at tomorrow, and then gives me 2 days for corrections. There you go. That's what I'm working on. So it's an easy week. It's just computer stuff. All the labor is done. And I've been publishing on Instagram a lot. I've been showing my leather bags because it's Christmas season. So the leather bag things are moving a little bit. And I'm just having fun. I don't know if you guys noticed. I've been having fun with just laser etching ice picks and putting them up for sale one at a time. Mm-hmm. And every time I put up, I've only done two so far, but I'll laser etch an ice pick with a funny saying and then put it on Instagram. And I put a price. I notice now, last year I never put prices on anything because I had other people selling them. This year I just said it doesn't matter because our fan bases don't overlap. So I've been putting my price up, which is lower than anything that you'd see at a retail shop. And it's actually, I think it's refreshing for people to see what I'm selling things for. Well, so all the leather and stuff and all like the handmade stuff isn't on my website. I just sell it through Instagram. It's too complicated to send a picture of the latest leather bag and then it sells immediately and everybody wastes their time dealing with the website stuff. So I just put it on Instagram. It's a real immediate, direct thing. And still, I'll put a bag up and I'll say, this is the price. This is where you have to contact me. And I'll get an email because they have my email from the Instagram post. And the email says, I can't find any of the bags on the website. They would have had to read the words, this is not on the website, and then my email address. Email me and ask me why it's not on the website. But that's life.
Directions are hard to follow.
Yeah.
Well, people don't read a lot of product things. I mean, you know, like with our digital plans, they say very clearly, this is a step-by-step build plan, not a CNC file. And I constantly get emails like, you know, where are the CNC files? Or I think I've talked about this before. We sell digital plans on Etsy as well. Just the same stuff, just on Etsy. And they're, you know, they're pretty inexpensive for what you're paying. And I constantly, like once or twice a week, get an email from somebody who goes, when does my package arrive? And I'm like, well, it's a digital file, so here's how you download it. And they'll be like, yeah, but when does the bed that I ordered show up? Well, the bed is not $7 on Etsy, and it's not going to be shipped to your house. This is a digital plan. And it very clearly says that in the description. Plus, the picture is like crazy. A digital drawing. Man, it happens so much. And it's interesting because there's tons of people from France. I don't know why. There's quite a few all over Europe, but it seems to be mostly people in France think they're actually getting a tool shed for $10 or whatever it is, you know.
Man.
But, yeah, people just don't really read. David, what have you been doing?
Well, I'm going to try to show this off.
Whoa.
I've been working on this plant stand, and look at
cool.
that.
Wow, that's
so,
cool.
I think I came up with a pretty cool technique. There was no power carving on here. So, and there's what the...
It's solid? Look at that. So,
okay, this is going to be hard to explain. Maybe you guys can help me. But the outside, if you're looking top down from this plant stand, think of it as a 9-pointed star, but very rounded over corners. So it kind of has like a wavy, flowery look all the way around. And then there's a hole in the top for a plant pot to go into. And this thing is 24 inches tall. And I came up with kind of like a cheat code on how to make this, where the inside of it is made up with individual layers that were cut with a router template. And then you just stack up those layers, and then you wrap the whole thing with a veneer, and it looks like one solid piece of wood. So there's no power carving, there's no crazy templates or special tools needed to make this thing. That's the hook of the video, is woodworking cheat code. And it worked. It came out really, really good. There's a seam in the back that I got to fix, but I'm just going to put a piece of wood over that. Mm. This is a treat for the people watching the video. But the rest of it, it looks like a solid piece of wood, and I got to work on the inside here too. But it's nice and heavy. It's layered with the pink foam and plywood. If I would have done the whole thing in plywood, this would have been crazy heavy. So
I was curious why it was heavy, because I thought it was all foam.
You alternated
makes
it?
Sense.
Yeah, I alternated. You can see on the inside where I haven't coated it yet. And I'm really happy with it. And so the foam is kind of tricky to work with, because lots of glues just melt foam. Mm-hmm. The original plan was to use contact cement, and contact cement melts insulation foam. Spray adhesive, yeah. Spray adhesive also melts insulation foam. Super 77 used to work, but they changed the formula to be a little bit more environmentally friendly. So now Super 77 melts the foam, and you can get from the home center foam glue for like a caulking gun, and that works, but it doesn't work in this situation, because I am veneering around a very curved piece, and I need like an instant bond so I can get into that next curve. And so I just found some really, really strong double-sided tape, and the veneer is held on with that. Kind of a double-sided tape, the good stuff can be a little expensive, but I'm not using, 20 pounds of walnut. So I save money there and use the money on other materials. And it came out really cool. I made two of them, and I'm going to finish them up today. And that video will be out the same day as this podcast.
Hmm. That's cool. I like that idea a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I learned a lot, and now that I know that it works, I think I can get even crazier with the designs and do even more funky shapes that I think just are visually stunning and kind of like, how did you do that type look?
Yeah. You could also do with a shape that's, that doesn't have any real flat planes like that. You could do the same thing with multiple species and strips of veneer to make it look like there's literally no way you could carve that shape out of those different grains going in those different directions.
You could do
all sorts of stuff with that.
Yeah. Huh. And for this particular video, I didn't, I started off with a router template to show, like, you can just do this with regular tools. And then I finished it up on the CNC saying, you know, if you have a CNC, this is great for robots or whatever. But I wanted to show, like, this could easily be done with basic tools. But the next time I do it, I think it would be really cool if I did stuff with the CNC that you couldn't do with, you know, basic tools, and just get really crazy with the shapes.
Yeah.
And then maybe play around with the different grains and
I like the idea of the species. the stacked material to come up with a whole new shape. It's a nice idea.
Yeah, it's just a simple idea. It's just work from the bottom up and then cover it up.
You know, I saw, this is not the same thing at all, but it made me think of that, that stacking thing. I saw on Instagram the other day an artist, and I don't remember what his name was, but he took solid walnut chunks, like, and glued them up, and they started out big at the bottom. They got smaller as they went up, and then they got big again. And so it was all glued up, and then he carved that down. So the entire thing was solid walnut. Mm-hmm. And it's a table with a wide, curvy base that, like, smooths up into a trunk and then back out into a tabletop. And so then when you look at the top of it, it's almost like a semicircle, like a half a table. And the backside of it kind of, like, curves off down the trunk. And it's, I don't even know how to explain it. It's just perfectly smooth, very curvy in all these different ways, and an excellent finish on it. So he just has this massive half of a table out of solid walnut. It's just beautiful. And it was just a matter of stacking up, you know, rough cut pieces and then, like, carving them down to be all smooth. But I'll have to see if I can find who that was while we're talking and put it in the show notes. Let's see, what have I been working on? So I just finished up yesterday, sent you guys a picture of it, this I guess you might call it an art piece. Would you call that an art piece, guys?
I haven't received anything yet.
Yesterday, the thing I sent, the I made a sound diffuser.
Oh yeah, yeah. Audio
that's diffuser.
An art piece. Totally an art piece.
Okay.
Totally.
Now I feel validated. Thank you.
When I saw the photo, I actually thought, oh, Bob made an art piece. And then when I zoomed in, I'm like, oh, this also has a function.
Yeah. And I kind of went the other way with it. I was thinking, I want to build a giant sound diffuser, which is just a way to break up reflections of sounds, for anybody that doesn't know what that is. It's instead of having a flat surface where sound bounces, you know, off at a 90-degree angle or whatever, this is an... it's a bunch of surfaces that make the sound reflect differently. That's the point. So you can make these in all different ways, but I started with that as the goal. And I thought, well, how can I make that at least interesting to look at? Because it's right above my desk. I'm going to see it constantly. It's going to be in all the videos and everything. And so I made it out of slats of cedar. And I cut them all and then clamped them down with, not clamped them, but I built a frame around them to hold them all in place on the floor, and then used a power carver to make the surface not flat. So there's waves and there's, like, circles kind of cut into it and everything. Then took each one of those pieces, put them in a frame, and then each one of the pieces can move forward and backward. So I can adjust whole thing.
Not turn, but they actually move forward and backwards.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
So there, each one has a little 3D printed tab on the top and the bottom, and they're setting in a track, and so they can push forward and backward about an inch and a half, the thickness of each one of the bars. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know how effective it is, how much of a difference it will actually make, but I think it looks really cool.
So
that's right about me.
There's a couple of different ways to approach recording. One, you can completely deaden the room so you get no sound reflection, and then you can add, like, a reverb later. But many, and that's usually recommended for small rectangular rooms. But if you go to a recording studio, they want the sound of the room, but they want to tame down those reflections, and you don't get standing waves of sound bouncing back and forth between walls. You kind of want it to diffuse it and disperse it. And the recording studio that I used to work at, the wall was kind of like a two-tone. So the bottom half of the wall had a bunch of slats that you could turn. The top half of the wall was a wall and then just had hung diffusers that were placed in very strategic spots. But the bottom half, you'd actually turn the slats. Hmm. And then there's a company that came in from Detroit that did all the sound testing and stuff. And so I assumed that yours would turn too, but they move back and forth, and I don't understand how they move back and forth.
Well, I mean, so the whole frame is twice as deep as the slats. Each slat has a little 3D printed fin on the top and the bottom to like give it a little track thing, and that's sitting in a slot cut on the laser at the top and the bottom. So it's captured there, but can slide straight forward and straight back. So that's just like one of the pieces in here. I still have a lot of flat surface that I need to put up some absorption panels on. I did make a bass trap that goes up in the corner. I don't know if I sent you a picture of that or not, but it's
I see it.
It's in the corner, and which was actually kind of confusing to think about, just trying to figure out how to get it mounted in two walls and a ceiling.
Yeah.
But I laser cut a face, and then it's packed with foam behind it to kind of cut down on the bass getting caught up in the corner, I guess is a thing. I don't know. I read up on this, and I don't have proof that any of it was bad to begin with.
Right.
And I don't have proof that my changes will affect anything, but it's like, well, you know, best practice gives me something cool, new to make.
And it looks
cool. The ripple, the water ripple in there. I didn't see that until just now.
Oh, thanks. So that was inspired by, remember a few weeks back I was telling you about my sister who carved this giant crazy thing? It's inspired by that. My sister totally inspired me because she made a really awesome piece that is just laying on her like coffee table. And so I took that same idea, and that's how I got to the shape of the thing.
Mm.
She also made, I don't think I talked about this. So she made that like ripply piece of maple. And when it's laid down, it looks like somebody dropped a stone in the water and it's, you know, all these waves are coming out from it. It's gorgeous. Then she wanted to make stones. So she made rocks out of walnut, and they're different sizes and they're kind of river rock shape, but they're anywhere from like 6 or 7 inches down to 2 or 3 inches. And they have a flat on the top and the bottom that's, you can't really see, but it makes it so that you can stack them up. So she has this maple ripple and then this stack of wooden rocks piled up on her table. It looks awesome. I need to get a picture of that. Send it to you. Anyway, so she inspired the
Did you do that with effect. The Arbitech?
Yeah. Yeah, she's got a couple of their things. And then I think she had
I'm saying, is that how you did it?
Oh, yeah, that's what I did. Yeah, yeah. She used the turboplane. And she has another type a newer product from them that is not as aggressive, and I don't remember what it's called. She was telling me about it.
I have one power of those, scraper. I don't remember what it's called either.
Maybe, yeah.
Power scraper or something like that.
But, yeah. So, anyway, that's what I've been working on. And that was kind of my last project for the year. This is the last one I need to do for the year. I still have more I want to just keep working on. But, like, it's the middle of December. I always try to take at least the last 2 weeks of the year off and just relax, spend time with the kids while they're home and they're not in school, and just try not to have much to do. And it's that time of year, but at the same time, on the inside, I'm like, yeah, but I have my list is still there and I'm excited about it and I want to work on the next thing. I also want to just go clean the shop and try to organize and get set up for, you know, the beginning of next year. But, anyway, so I'm kind of looking ahead, which is what we were going to kind of talk about. I'm looking ahead at not only next year, but also just the next couple of weeks and trying to decide. Of course, I want to take time, spend time with my family, but my kids are busy and they do a lot of stuff. And so it's not like they need me to be around all the time. So if I have more free time than usual over the next couple of weeks, what do I want to do with that? Do I want to go work on the car? Do I want to clean up the shop? Do I want to start working on some music? You know. So I'm trying to look ahead at at those things. But we were talking before we started recording about looking ahead. Mm-hmm. And I said, are we talking like next year or just indefinitely?
In life.
And David said, indefinitely. So let's do that. Looking ahead, yeah. What do you guys think? Obviously, nobody knows. And at least for me, I have thoughts and plans that I don't necessarily want to share about my future. But I'm curious if you've got anything that you've thought about in the next year or 10 or 20.
Well, I've been working hard on the leather business, and I've been pushing that a bit, and talking about ways of getting it out there more with my brother. My brother's going to maybe help me do some marketing. But in general, for me, as I get older and my body aches a little bit at 50, I'll be 58 in April, it's a good way to make a potent amount of money with limited physical exertion. I could sit at a desk, I could make these. It's not slinging big pieces of wood. I mean, I am still working on the graveyard house, and that's going to go on indefinitely, but the physical labor that's involved in some of the other stuff I do, like for instance, if I was... I actually quoted a big liquor job that was going to happen in February, but I don't think it's going to happen for me because there was some logistics that I just could not deliver on, like delivering them to a different state and stuff. I said, I'll make them, but I am not going to deliver them. So I think for that reason, I lost the job. But that was a lot of physical effort. And when I think about the amount of money I would have made versus dollar per hour, I make a lot more money doing the leather work, just sitting and offering them up for sale. And it's a little bit more artful for me in some ways. So going forward, that's why I made that special room just for that stuff. And that's one thing I want to do going forward, is do that. And then definitely veer more into art, more fine art, maybe even functional art. And the bench is kind of a crossover. Rachel, my girlfriend, she sells art. She's an art advisor for people who collect art. So she's an intermediary between the artists and the people that buy it. And she really piqued her interest when she saw the bench. She's like, I'm going to offer it to some of my clients. So we'll see if something like that starts to take hold. More stuff like that. And just, I have all the resources. I have everything here. In my mind, a career shift is just making more stuff with new avenues. And the leather and then the art is two of those things.
So this may be a bad question to ask, or
yeah,
and you don't have to answer this.
Ask away.
Going back to like doing the leather because of the physical exertion and stuff, it's absolutely reasonable, and I think probably wise, to start looking at things like that that don't require you to be in the same condition that you were, you know, in 10 years that you are right now or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Does that hurt at all? It hurts me a little bit to think about that for myself. But does that hurt you at all? Is there any pride in like your ability to sling plywood and frame up whatever that you know naturally is going to change? Does that hurt you at all?
I think it doesn't hurt me because it's just the way it is. I watched my dad be able to be physical right up until the minute he just couldn't anymore. And he never complained that he wasn't able to. He just didn't do it anymore. He never voiced his, like, I wish I could carry a sheet of plywood. He just did it until one day I noticed he just wasn't moving as much and he wasn't doing as many physical things. And that's when his hoarding began, because he started bringing a lot of little things in and around. And that's when his hoarding kind of got really bad. But in general, I don't mind. I want to be physical. For instance, I didn't do the bike last week because I was so physical with that log, moving those logs around. I worked really physically hard on all that stuff. The hand planing, I had a hand plane the saw marks out of it. That took me like 3 hours. My whole upper chest was on fire. In the video, you see it for 10 seconds, but it took like almost 3 hours of hand planing to get all the saw marks out. And I was drenched in sweat and I was on fire. I was like, there's no reason to go bike 10 miles on the bike, in stationary bike. I just worked out pretty hard. So I like the fact that I'm still physical at my age and that I can be physical, but I also love the zen, calm quality of sitting in a leather shop, making something that I know will sell for hundreds of dollars. And honestly, I mean, it's nice that I have this sort of, maybe it's too early to call it a staple, like the ice pick is a staple item that is always going to sell. I know at this point, 10 years, it's been selling. The leather bags, I think they'll ebb and flow, but it's nice to be able to whip out a couple of leather bags and show them on Instagram, and then suddenly I have, you know, a few thousand dollars in the bank. And for me, honestly, it's nice. You know, people think I'm, if you read the comment section, people are like, wow, boy, you got so much money, you still got to do this? Yeah, I still got to work. I am not a millionaire. If anybody comes around here, they see where all my money is. It's all spent on the property.
If people think that, you know, if I had $1 million, you wouldn't see me anymore, just so you know.
Yeah, somebody made a comment on my latest video because I have a 32-inch chain bar on my chainsaw. Somebody made a comment that, oh boy, with all that money, you got to flex and buy a 32-inch bar for your chainsaw. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, I'm not trying to flex by buying. I just want a chainsaw that will cut through a log that's on my property. Somehow somebody translated that to me, just like flexing how much money I have.
Well, the reason I ask about that is just because I find myself, you know, I'm not anywhere near as old as you are.
No.
You know, I already find myself like finding my limitations, you know, new limitations sometimes. And earlier last week, I was lifting 2x4s, these cedar 2x4s, the lightest possible 2x4 you can lift. And I was putting them I had them on my shoulder and I was putting them down into this trailer. And I just happened to turn the right way and my back went like, you know, and it took my breath away.
Yeah.
And it was one of those moments where I didn't actually do anything wrong. I didn't long-term hurt it, but it knocked me out of being able to be physical for a couple of days. I had to take it easy and let the muscle just relax and stuff. And, you know, like, it's frustrating to me that that's part of the natural progression of things. Yeah. But at the same time, it forced me to have a few days of not doing that type of work so that I could then... And I use that time still productively in other things that weren't quite as physical. So it's been on my mind. That's the reason that came up. And
yeah.
You know, I know it's a trade-off that we have to make over time.
That's what happens. Yeah.
I have thought about this quite a bit recently because in a couple of weeks, I am getting a steroid shot in my finger. I have what is called trigger finger, where my pinky gets stuck. Mm. And it freaks me out when I'm sleeping and all of a sudden I can't move my finger and I have to kind of like pop it back into place. Mm. And so I went to the doctor the other day and basically I had a choice, a steroid shot or we could do surgery. Mm. And he said steroid shot will work 2 out of 3 times. And if it doesn't work, then we can go to surgery. So my next step is the steroid shot. And then I'm having another issue where it's really hard for me to put on shirts and coats right now. There's something weird with my shoulder. In a couple weeks, I've got an x-ray. I'm getting an x-ray to find out what's going on. It's getting difficult to lift things. And in my head, I'm thinking these are just temporary issues. They'll be fixed and I'll be back to wherever I was. But I'm also been thinking about, like, what if I can't do this anymore? Mm. And I think I would totally be okay. My happiness comes from just making something and making videos and sharing that. And so if I had to switch from woodworking to something else, I think I would be just as happy as long as I'm making something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there's adjustment that, you know, you have to make, then there's adjustment you get to make. And sometimes you can turn one into the other, you know, I think. I know I've started doing a whole lot more like 3D printing and that type of work in the last couple of years, partially because I enjoy it, but it also maybe subconsciously is a setup for that same thing. You know, it's like, yeah, I don't have to throw 3D printers around to be able to make things with them. So, you know, that works out. But I actually went to the doctor a couple weeks ago for my neck because I've had this neck thing for a long time. So they took some x-rays and one of the comments that she had after seeing the x-rays was, your shoulder has arthritis in it. And so if you haven't noticed pain in your shoulder, you probably will. And it could be something that, you know, is a temporary condition based on like a whatever, or it could just, that's how your shoulder is now. And as soon as she said that, like the next day, I went to lift something, and I'm like, yeah, this shoulder is kind of hard to move. It like, does hurt a little bit. And now when I, even doing this right here, right now, I can feel it right there. And yeah, I probably would not have noticed if she hadn't brought it up as like a, you've got a thing there that you, you know. So it is, I don't know. It is a thing that we have to deal with, I guess, and just choosing how we move through those things, past those things is,
you know, there's the Louis C.K. bit of, I don't remember it exactly, but he goes to the doctor, and the doctor's just like, you have a crappy ankle now. And that's just, there's nothing we can do. You just have a crappy ankle.
So, yeah, I remember that. That's true. It's funny. Now that you guys are saying, I had some, I guess, arthritis in this finger and my knee. And my shoulder. So this side of my body, on my right side, my knee, my shoulder, and my finger were all hurting for weeks. I remember even talking to Derek about it and Rachel. And now that we're talking about it, my knee doesn't hurt anymore, my shoulder doesn't hurt, and my finger doesn't hurt. And it just went away, and I wasn't even paying attention.
Mm.
So that's my medical plan, by the way.
Just ignore it.
It goes away. And it always goes away. No, but I'm telling you, if you watch the bench video, there are a few moments where I'm on my back, I'm underneath, I'm on my, and it's not as easy as it used to be. And then I just like drop everything and lay on the bench a couple times and just sit there and just like take a minute. And I left some of those little clips in of me just stopping and taking a minute after physically exerting myself. But I'm happy I'm still mobile.
Yeah. Cool. Well, David, what about you? What's your future other than your janky pinky? You know, what's your future looking like?
Well, I think every year I always say I want to get more into art. I want to be more artful. And I think this year I actually followed through on some of those things. I just kind of had I flipped the switch in my brain and said, I'm just going to make the things that I want to make. And so that's what I've been doing for like 6 months. And so I just want to continue on that and keep going, getting weird and going crazy with the designs. And since I've made this mental switch, like just make what you want, forget about the algorithm, I'm like, okay, well, I'm gonna make some art then. And then when I go to make art, I don't have the ideas. I don't like, I'm going through my sketchbook and I'm like, I should have been the whole time not making art, I should have been sketching art ideas. And I thought they would just flow out of me, and every week I wouldn't have to worry about a project. I could just, you know, create the thing that's sitting in my head. But there's, I don't know. It's, I want to be an artist, but you have to make art pieces. You have to design these things. And so, I was in the habit of sketching furniture pieces every day. Whether I was going to make it or not, I just wanted to get better at sketching and just get better at design. And I need to get back into that and just focus more on like visual stuff, things that have like a visual impact. And so I want to continue down this road of making what I want to make and just get weirder and weirder and do things like this crazy plant stand and just experiment and keep doing that.
Cool.
2025 is all about getting weird.
Do you think there's any, does that inform any changes next year in like how much you do or how you shoot videos or how, anything else other than like the objects themselves?
Yeah. So over the last few months, you know, we tried to get a little bit more cinematic and artful in the shooting of the videos. And that is, it makes shooting videos more fun for me. If I'm thinking about the end product is the video and the thing that I'm making, and they both should be visually pleasing. And I watch a lot of like cinematic stuff on YouTube and how to's and people's final short films and stuff. And I'm like, that's what I want to do. But when I go to execute it, it's not as easy. Because I am so, I've done things for 10 years. Like this shot at the table saw, always works. So we always use this particular shot at the table saw. And now it's like, what if we shot it from a different angle, showed it from a different perspective, or my perspective, or a top down, or whatever. And so we've been trying to do that a little bit more, where we just shoot things a little bit different. But then when I get into the editing, I'm like, this doesn't flow the way I wanted it to, because we didn't do enough planning. You can't just shoot a bunch of artsy stuff, throw it in a video, and have a good video. It needs a little bit more structure to it. And so I want to get better at that structure, so it's not just a pretty shot. It's a shot that means something, that pushes the video forward. And so I want to just get better at making videos. And I was thinking about years ago, the old Picciuto, the dream would be to do one video a month, and the product in the video is an art piece, and the video is an art piece, and I made all the music for the video, and that the whole thing would just be one epic, amazing film. And I still kind of want to work towards that. And I don't know, I'm just rethinking the way I make videos has made it more fun for me lately. The last video I just put out, it was a sponsored video for Microjig, but I made this wine rack in there. And instead of just taking songs that I've created and using that as the background, I scored the video. Mm. I scored an 8-minute video from beginning to end. And I've never done that. And wow. It was music that I wouldn't normally make. And that was a crazy exercise and experiment for me. And I'm really, really proud of this video.
Yeah, that's great.
And I know the whole thing is an 8-minute ad for Microjig, and that turns people off. But it's the best video I've ever made. And,
good for you.
and they're super happy with it. I'm super happy with it. The viewers aren't always happy because they're watching an ad, and I totally get it. And so I'm going to try to learn to get a little bit more flowy and a little bit more natural in the video process. That was a long answer.
That's cool.
Like I talked for 10 minutes, but yeah.
No,
that's what
awesome.
I'm excited about.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool. That's very cool. I think it's easy, at least for me, to like, this new thing that I'm doing is working, so now I'm just going to, like, not change anything.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
Everything just pause and do more of this. And that's gotten me into trouble many times. That's just me.
And if you think about it, when Casey Neistat stopped making his daily vlog, he said it just got too easy. Like, this is the form, like, not so easy, but there's still work involved. But there was just this formula that works. And when you get a formula that works, that's really exciting at the beginning, because, like, oh, I've worked so hard, this is finally working. But when you do that over and over and over again, it loses its excitement, because there's the challenge is missing. The fun of it has gone, and you need to find that new challenge.
Yeah, definitely.
Can I ask you guys each a personal question?
Sure.
Remember that YouTube year wrap-up we got? We talked about before we started? We don't have to talk about the details, but did you guys happen to remember how many uploads you did? It says, I'm looking at mine's window still open. It says 39 uploads. Do you guys happen to know how many you did for the year?
I think I had 36.
Oh, right. Mine said like 46.
Oh, wow.
Which doesn't make any sense. Surely that, like, includes all the things we deleted, you know, like the incorrect uploads
shorts.
And stuff.
Because I wonder if it includes shorts. I did a few shorts, not a lot this year.
Yeah, that I don't know.
I thought I would have uploaded more. By the end of the year, I will have uploaded probably 42. Mm. But anyway, just curious, that's all.
Yeah. Let's see. For me, moving ahead, looking ahead, I have a few things I've been kind of identifying that I want to continue to try to do better at. And I'm thinking short term, the next year or so, next couple of years. One is, I want to stop justifying things. And I've tried to stop this for a while now, but I still naturally do it. I think there's a people pleaser in me that just wants to make sure people understand why I'm this way.
I hear it in the videos.
Yeah.
You'll explain, like, I could do this, but I'm going to do this because I'm Bob.
Yeah. And so I want to get better and continue to not try to justify my choices in light of other choices, justify them from a, like, and justify is the wrong word, but I don't want to sound like I'm having to cover all my bases all the time, because that's what I feel like I have to do, and none of us have to do that.
No, just do your thing.
It's just my natural response to, I know I'm going to get this kind of feedback, so I may as well go ahead and like get ahead of it. Whatever, you know. So I'm trying not to do that. I've tried not to do that for a while, but I'm going to try to continue to get better at it, because I can still feel it in myself. Another thing, I, and this is kind of the reason I was asking you, Jimmy, earlier that question, is that I tried to figure out how to say this to myself for a while. I think I figured it out. I don't want to spin down. I don't want to, because I've cut down the number of videos that I've done on a monthly basis in the last year or 2 years or whenever, however long it's been now. So I'm doing less. I'm requiring less of myself work-wise. I'm giving myself more free time to, in the morning, to sit on the couch and read and drink coffee. And I'm loosening the requirement on myself as it is in regard to work. So what I don't want to happen is for me to, you know how like when you see an older person in your life, this is not my parents, so I'm not referencing them, but you see an older person in your life, you can see them age, you can see them start to spin down their activity, spin down the things that they commit to, spin down the things that they enjoy, and they're settling into a slower, less, you know, more fragile state. That's just what people do. And I will do that, naturally. But I don't want to do it yet. And so I'm trying to remind myself that just because I'm changing how often I do videos, just because I'm changing how, you know, like I don't have as much home renovation to do, or I don't have this to do that I used to have, and I don't have this, and I don't have this, that doesn't mean that I need to start winding things down and settle into being still and settle into being comfortable with sitting. You know what I mean? I can't quite think of the right way to put it. But
where do you see yourself when you're Jimmy's age?
Man, it's so far from now. I'm just kidding. Jimmy's only 10 years older than me, just to be... Yeah, I'm totally joking. Well,
that. 10 years is 10 years is my YouTube career. Anything could change. You could change it.
You could
change it. I mean, it's the meat of my YouTube career. I really started 13 and a half, 14 years ago.
Realistically, I have no idea where the next 10 years will where I will be, the type of work I will be doing. There's no way that I could tell. But the thing that I do know, my goal in work is like such a small part of everything. And that's what we talk about here a whole lot. But like in my mind, the way I think about my days and my life and my next 10 years and what I've got left, work is really small. I've made it really small. So the thing that I think about in the next 10 years is, if I'm 57, at 57, will I still be active and involved enough to be the grandparent that I could potentially be at that point?
I think so. I
mean, that's my goal. Like, that's the thing that I'm looking at. What does 10 years look like? Can I be that person?
You see how active I am. And you take care of yourself much more than I ever did at your age. You know, you're 10 years ago, I did take care of myself the way you do, but I'm not saying I've gone to waste, but I used to spend much more time focused on exercising. I jogged. I used to do a lot of that stuff. I started focusing more on work. But the point I'm making is as active as I am, you'll be more active than I am at my age. I'm sure of it.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying that's my gauge for what 10 years looks like, not necessarily, you know, how many videos I'll be making every week or whatever.
Yeah.
So those are two big things. Stop justifying things and don't spin down in work or life or whatever. I want to keep spinning as much as I can,
I like that.
As long as I can, until I have to. There will be certain things that have to spin down at certain times, and that's fine. It's natural, but I don't want to prematurely get there. The other thing, looking forward, is that so I've had a lot of really fantastic feedback doing these like problem solving videos in the last 6 months or so, where like I have a thing that normally, historically, over the last 10 years or so, I would say making that object is not interesting enough, so I can't make a video about it. And then I kind of bit the bullet and said, well, maybe I can take a different tact on making that object and talk about my process, about how I think about making that object. And that has been really good. It's not huge views or anything, but people are responding really well to it. And that's worked well enough that now I'm looking back at these other ideas, these other things where the object itself is not really that interesting, or not, it's interesting to me, but it's not broad interesting. But I'm finding ways to make the problem solving and the thought process of the thing, the video. And so moving, looking ahead, that is so much more natural to me to do videos like that than it is to, like, this is the size screw you use to put in this thing. And, you know, so moving ahead, I really want to continue to find ways to do that type of video, not necessarily that type of video, but videos that are natural to me to do. I found that those are one type of video that are natural for me to do. Mm. And it's just been easier. And I've enjoyed the last year of videos so much more than probably anything else I've ever done. And not because of performance or lack of performance, just natural. I don't know. They feel better. And so I want to find more of those going forward, because I think that's probably part of longevity in this business is, you know, not having to act to make your videos, but just naturally being able to, unless you're an actor. I'm not an actor, but, you know, so, yeah. And I think, this is another thing. Remember the YouTube channel I was talking about that I kind of wanted to make that somebody else should make about me trying things? Am I too old for this? Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a plan for that. We'll talk about that in the after show because we're over.
Okay.
That's part of my, you know, the things I'm thinking about for next year and stuff as well.
Nice.
But, yeah. I could talk for a long time about that stuff because I think a lot about the future and, you know, what work looks like and what life looks like in the next few years, even though it's all completely unknown. But that's probably enough for now. Any other thoughts from you guys on looking ahead?
I like the idea of doing 12 videos a year, just doing bigger projects. I might. That's why when you said that, Dave, that's what made me think about how many uploads we both, all three of us.
The
idea of doing maybe half as many uploads and bigger projects, more fun. Because there's a couple of big house projects I want to do. I added them to my notebook while we were talking. So, yeah, maybe I'll do bigger, longer form videos.
Hmm. Yeah. But now that you have a way to slice up trees,
yeah,
there's a lot more potential for crazy big projects.
Yeah. Two of them are involved in that, yeah.
Hmm.
I can tell you. You want to hear them?
Sure. If you want to share them.
So I want to spill it. I want to make porch poles for the back. I have this 10 porch poles in the front of my front porch, and there's 9 porch poles in the back, which right now are just 4x4s. So when you come to my house, the front looks kind of regal, and when you go to the back, it looks a little bit more like just industrial. So I want to make the back look regal as well by changing the porch planks and also the porch poles. So I might try and find some long trees. Now, I know people are going to say the porch poles are going to check, and that's okay with me. So I might find some solid ash trees and make the porch poles for the back. I'll sawmill them.
What kind of trees?
Ash. There's lots of ash trees around here. Ash.
Gotcha. Trees.
So I might find 10 ash trees. Ash trees.
Okay, well, move ahead. Trees.
And then lathe up the poles. And then also my big giant bandsaw that I...
Lay them up.
My big giant bandsaw that I put together this year that Keith Rucker restored, I want to build its own enclosure. So on the property, I just cleared this whole area. It's crazy. It's this area that I'm clear. I'm going to send you guys pictures later. This whole area is now cleared because I got to make room. That horse barn in my backyard is basically going to be its own house once everything's said and done. It's going to be completely autonomous. You could live there on your own. for that reason, I had to clear this whole field for the septic lines for the leaching field. So there's plenty of more room in this little enclave in the back of my property, and I want to put a post and beam little hut just for that bandsaw. So it's on the property, but it has its own dedicated building. So that's another thing I want to do this year. That'll be a lengthy video. That won't be a one-week video, no way. But that's all sawmill timbers. And I actually have an idea to build. Some of the guys from the Lagersol team, some of their influencers, all from Sweden, would come over here and we'd build a log cabin out on the property. Something small, something we could build in like 10 days. And I spoke to a few of the guys when I was out there. They're really into that project. So if I could pull that off. So the big long-term house projects here.
Wow.
We'll see if anything comes together. And then another one more is on my mind. I'm looking at my notebook. I want to do an enclosure. If you guys have ever seen or been to my house, the blacksmith shop is on the back of this little garage. And the garage is 20 feet, and the blacksmith shop is another 12 feet open to the air. I have this concept for sliding doors, so I could make it open to the air or close it off in the winter, because I'm out there working now, and the wind sometimes is too much, and I can't get really hot metal because it's wind and cold. So if I close it in and cut the wind and cut the cold a little bit. So I have this idea for sliding doors, which I'm going to try and do this summer. That's it.
Cool.
Those are real big projects, big bites.
Yeah.
I don't even know what I'm doing next week. But I'll figure it out.
Cool. Well, I want to thank our Patreon supporters. It's our last show of the year. We're going to take a couple weeks off, and I want to say big thank you to everybody that has helped us out on Patreon at any point. We are super grateful for you all for making the show possible, for supporting what we're trying to do individually and together. It gives the three of us a chance to catch up and to talk face-to-face on the computer, and in a way that we probably wouldn't otherwise. So personally, from like a personal, you know, my friend's standpoint, thank you to the Patreon supporters for justifying us doing this.
Yes.
And enabling us to do this.
Thank you.
It actually matters to me personally that we get to do this. So thank you to all of them.
Other people are paying for our therapy.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. So thank you for paying for that. But this top group of supporters, they go above and beyond. They pay more than they need to support what we're doing. So big thanks, huge thanks, gigantic thanks to Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Maincrafting, Chad's Custom Creations, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leather Goods, Sean Beckner, Scott at Daddy Yourself DIY, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Manegin, Crabtree Creative, and Matthias Garnow. Them, as well as people like Matt Guarino. I probably said that wrong. But Matt, thank you for your support.
Matt.
There's many people on this list that are not in that top group that never get their names called out. Like Paul Jackman. He sounds weird. I'm just kidding. Paul Jackman's on here. Thanks for the support, Paul. Since 2015.
You got to be careful what you say, because Paul listens to every after show.
That's no, that's amazing. Thank you to Paul. But there's a lot of people that support us that honestly, you know, they don't get their names shouted out in the show. And so I'm going to read them one by one, starting now. So we're going to have another hour and a half of recording. Oh. I'm just kidding. Big thank you to everybody. We can't say all of your names, but we are grateful for the support. And if you want to get the after show where we talk about Paul Jackman, that's what the after show is. It's the entire thing is talking about him every week, really.
His head's so big.
It's gigantic.
Let fame go to his head.
If you want, is that what it is? That's why his head's so big?
Yeah.
That's amazing. if you want to get the after show and hear more of us talk about random things, you can go to patreon.com/makingit and join up at any level. Everybody gets it. And it's a separate podcast feed that you can put in your player and listen to. It's also on YouTube. We do video for the after show as well. The main show is on YouTube as well. So go check those out if you want. Thank you. Seriously. All right. You guys got anything to recommend this week?
I just texted you guys a video by Sawyer Designs. I built an epic workbench from 532-year-old tree. Now, it's a two-year-old video, but it was suggested to me this week. And it's great. And surprisingly, while I'm watching it, he mentions me. So thank you. Nick, I think his name is. Huh. Thank you, Nick. So this is an old video. It's actually done really well for him. It's over 700,000 views. And he does this really beautiful arch design, and the process is amazing.
That is really pretty.
Yeah, it's a real beautiful bench with these arch legs, so that when you push and shove on it, nothing's going to ever get loose.
Mm. Cool.
I am going with Wesley Treat's latest video, how to build a Sputnik, and it's fun. You learn about Sputniks through their history, and he builds one for himself. It's been his logo for years.
Yeah.
And the fact that he didn't have one in his shop is kind of crazy. And so he's built them before, but this one he is building for himself, and it turned out really cool.
Awesome. My pick this week is a channel that I think you told me about, Make Art Now. You told me about that channel, right? So his newest video, I think it's his newest one, is he built a 360-degree virtual production set from a Costco TV. And so he took this mount on the ceiling and hung like a 98-inch or 80-inch? Oh, yeah, it's 98. It's on the thumbnail. 98-inch TV with the camera straight across from it, and they move together around him. And so he has a virtual background that he modeled in Unreal Engine. And so he puts this background on there, and it's awesome. And, excuse me, and the video is just a good video. I've seen a couple of his videos, but I don't remember them. I don't remember much about them. But watching this one, I'm like, what a great camera personality. And like,
oh yeah,
you know, he's just like super engaging, and it's well edited, and I don't know, it's a fun one.
I always think of Bruce Campbell, like a young, is a younger, handsome Bruce Campbell. He's in his Instagram, he's been showing off this suction mount for a camera that I bought it because of him. And I think, Jimmy, did you get one of those suction mounts?
Yeah, mine's on the way. Hopefully I get it today.
Yeah. It's super cool. It's a little rechargeable suction mount, and it keeps track of how much pressure it has. So it'll turn off, so it's nice and quiet. But if it starts to lose grip, it comes back on. And it's kind of made for a car, but you can put it on a wall or anything. And he's been showing this thing off. I'm like, I have to get one. And so I've been using a couple. I've been using that for a couple shots, because it's now I can put a camera almost anywhere I want to get some coolest perspectives.
Nice. Another video, I'm just looking through my history here. There's actually two more little things that I've seen recently that I think are good. One is John Batiste. You know him? The musician?
Yeah, musician.
Just crazy.
He is so talented.
Unbelievable. Other level of human. I don't know. It's wild. But this video, we ran across it the other day, and it's him hearing Green Day for the first time. And so they play a Green Day song, but only the vocals and the drums. And he makes up the music to go with it. It's wild.
He's so unbelievably talented. He's so underrated on that show. They don't give him really... He's like the musical director for, I think, Conan O'Brien, right? No, not Conan.
Stephen Colbert. But he's not anymore.
Oh, he's gone?
He left. He's doing his own thing now, yeah.
Yeah, he's so unbelievably talented. When he does the demonstrations of different types of blues music on the piano. Did you see that Instagram that was going around?
I haven't seen that one.
He's popping up more on Instagram, but he's just so talented.
Well, I'm going to put a link to that because it's wild. And then the other one is, I think you told me about this channel as well, USSA Woodworking and 3D Printing.
Oh, yeah.
He put out a new video it's like there's no talking, and it's just him prototyping a bunch of different tools, his like router jig mount thing and all this stuff. And he doesn't really describe any of it. It's just showing off the different prototypes and how all the pieces work together. But it is fascinating how much design he must have put into all those pieces to get them to work together. So you should just check it out.
He's a master at 3D printing woodworking tools. Phenomenal.
Yeah. So I'm going to put that in here as well. Cool. You guys got anything else for this year?
That's enough.
No?
No?
Okay, yeah. Cool. Thanks for listening all year. Thank you for being here with us, everybody.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
we will see you.
See you in 2025. Woo!
See you then.
Love you.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays for everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for everything.
Yeah. We'll see you soon.